Welcome to the podcast ABCs of Parenting Adult Children. Please join us as we discuss parenting adult children and the unique struggles that it comes along with.
All right. Hello and welcome to ABCs of Parenting Adult Children Podcasts. My name is James Moffitt and I'll be your host. Today is January the 20th, 2024. And this is episode 13. It's our very first episode for January. No, it's our second episode for January.
Right.
We had Julie Miller last week, I believe.
I got a chance to watch that.
Huh?
I said I got a chance to watch that. That was good. Great with you too. Great.
Okay, good. So our guest speaker today is Richard Jones. Richard, tell us about yourself and talk about your Soapbox podcast as well as your addiction recovery program you run.
Okay, Jim. Again, thanks for having me. My name is Richard Jones. RN for 37, going on 38 years now. I run Second Starts, and I always tell everybody the number two, N-D-S-T-A-R-T-S. We help the families of young adults in the recovery process by teaching them to find new ways to support their child's sobriety. That's what we do, basically. And we enjoy what we do, and we've been doing it for a while.
You say it's called, I want to share the screen. So what's the URL to the Second Starts? What is that?
It's the, put in that number two, NDSTARTS.com.
SecondStarts.com.
Yes.
Here we go. Let me see if I can share my screen. Share. No, that didn't work very well. Can you see it on your screen?
I see your desktop.
You see my desktop. That's not what I want to show. Let's see. Let's do this. So let me move this over here. Is that better?
I still see the desktop.
Really?
Oh, there we go. There we go.
You got it?
That's it.
Cool.
That's it.
Very good. Tell us about that.
Well, basically, the thought and the mindset behind Second Starts is this. We believe that you cannot just defer your young adult success and sobriety to meetings and treatment programs and really expect much more than a slim chance of success, basically because the way the system is designed. The system is a number system. And if you don't get specific help, and when I say specific, that means being able to actually digest the challenges that the actual young person has, young adult, and the family, and really create a customized program, your chances of success are really bad. So what Second Starts does is help families come in and create a customized program that works along with the treatment programs that you may be already in. So we take what the treatment programs are doing, we kick it up a notch, and we elongate that to really combat relapse and really change the entire mindset of both groups, the family members and the young adults. We change the mindset, change the approach totally. So that's basically where it came from. It came from my dealings with young adults in the correctional system and how I saw how our system melded with the challenges that families of young adults have and how that system melded and saw where it did well and I saw where it failed. And we came up with a system that tried to give that a little bit more strength, a little bit more power.
I got you.
So, yeah. So that's the genesis of it. So,
well, with my listening audience, you know, we have a parenting support Facebook group.
Yes.
That we've had since 2014, and we have a little over 1,000 members, and we have a lot of parents that are struggling with issues with their children, with their preteens or teenagers and young adults.
Yes.
And some of the struggles that they talk about are the consequences of bad decisions that the young adults are making, or they're winding up, whether it be alcohol, drugs, whatever the addiction flavor of the day is.
Yes.
And some of the consequences are they lose their jobs, they lose their housing, they wind up in jail, they're reaching out to mom and dad for bail money, and a whole plethora of circumstances that revolve around
Exactly.
addiction and the results of addiction. And how did you get into this? I mean, did you, like Julie shared her addiction recovery story, her personal story. Do you have a personal story?
This is how it happened for me, Jim. Years ago, when I first got out of the military, I didn't know exactly in what direction I was going to go in my life. And through a set of circumstances, went to school, and I had enrolled in a, of all things, a glass blowing program.
Glass blowing.
Yeah, glass blowing program. That was what I was going to do.
Okay.
I had a cousin who did that very well, and I had worked with him, and that's what I was going to do, you know. And the college had a technical program, and they did that for industries, industries who were working with glass, and I was going
Sure.
to involve myself with that. Well, right before the program started, I was released for the program and kicked out in favor of one of the industry. There was a slot for industry, so I lost my slot, and I had nowhere to go for that semester. Well, my grandmother and my mother were nurses. I had never paid any attention to what they did. I knew they were nurses, but other than taking temperatures, you couldn't have told me what they did. Didn't
Right.
know. So my mother suggested, "Why don't you try the nursing program?" I sort of scoffed at that. I'm like, "I don't know about that there. I don't think I'm cut out for that." Well, a little bit of talking, and she introduced me to a couple of people, because I was a little hung up on a man nurse. I was a little hung up on the whole thing.
Right.
And I talked to a few people, and a couple months later, I'm enrolled in this program. Well, once I become a nurse, it becomes comfortable for me, and I spend a number of years, just, doing that, mostly working with geriatric people. Not till later did I become the director at a correctional facility. And once I did that, part of my duties obviously was running the nursing department, but I also took control of dealing with the younger inmates and getting them settled in. And I had a large number of interviews with younger inmates, and consequently phone conversations with their families and their loved ones. And throughout those interviews, I noticed some patterns between myself, the adults, the young adults, the family members, and then with my practitioners also. So I was right in the hub of everybody, basically coordinating everyone's care. And I noticed some things that worked with our system and some things that didn't work. I noticed some different approaches that would be better for parents to take that could be more advantageous in the recovery process. And
Right.
I started to put those things together, and this is how we came up with the program. So the nursing was sort of accidental, and accidentally now for about 37 years. So
Right.
yeah. So that's how it started. I tell this story, Jim, and I call it frequently when I get a chance to talk about it. I call it the Sally Port story.
The Sally
And
Port story. Okay.
Sally Port story, I
I
call it
know
that
exactly what
because
that is.
I'm going to explain to you. There's a little area right outside of a general population, holding area, and we call it the Sally Port. It's in between the outside and the inside, where you'll have a little table and chairs, and if you need to speak to somebody, come out to you there. Lawyers will speak to their clients in there, and things of that nature. Well, this is where I would meet with the younger adults and, check and see what their state of mind was, make sure that they were, ready for what was about to happen to them, find out if they were experiencing this. I would see repeat people. And in that area, I noticed that was a window of opportunity for even the most hardened individuals, even the scared individuals, the confused individuals. There was an opening where we could make the treatment that we were about to offer the suggestions we were about to give and the direction we were about to give, there was an area where they were very susceptible to accepting that information. But once you got past that area, it became more difficult. And once I saw a person for the second, third, or maybe even the fourth time in an incarceration, it became harder and harder each time. So I started to think about, well, what can we do at this point? Because there's a really vulnerable point. And it's not magic. I used to tell people, it's not a magical point where everybody, pretty much everybody that comes in there, the young person, regardless of how that, whether the relationships is with the adults in their, you know, family, they have a desire to get better. They have a desire to do better, and they desire to be better. And a lot of times it's the interference run by whatever their situation is, our society, our treatment processes. There's an interference and a friction. And I just noticed that there was for different types of people in different situations, there were different ways to avoid that friction. Now we're increasing the ability for our treatments and our interventions. Now we're increasing the ability for them to make a difference, for them to absorb. And I thought that was the whole key. I wanted to do something that was, the term I would use is non-clinical, even though I am a nurse. I wanted to do something where I could tell therapists, physicians, family members, hey, this is a way that we can strengthen everything we're doing. And the best way to help is not to scrap what you're doing and try to find a new system.
Right.
But to take the system that we're in and multiply its benefits and its effects. And this is basically the direction that I try to head in.
So your program enhances the other program that they're in, right? Whether it be, name some of those programs, AA or...
Well, depending on the direction, I like to visit with people who are first, second, third time in incarceration, because the difference between drug and substance use and early incarceration, the difference is basically non-existent. Okay? Okay. You're dealing with the same population. Okay. So we like to take those people who are just newer in the system and not too hard. This is why we mostly focus our areas in that 17 to 24 year old range. That's usually where we like to work, because that change from childhood to adulthood lies in those years for different people. And those are the years that we find that we can really get an opportunity to go in and change the actual focus of how they approach their life, how they approach a day, in order to now give them something to add on to the treatment and to combat relapse, because it's fairly easy to detox. You have people helping you. They take you somewhere to tell you what you got to do. A lot of these programs is easy for some people to listen to, because they are in a system that they're being leveraged. Once they get in trouble, the thought of, well, I don't want to get in trouble anymore. I don't want to anger my parents, for example. There's things that they are trying to avoid. And this is what, you know, usually drives compliance. But when we can get them in a situation where we change what's driving compliance, we can use that leverage. But now we change from not wanting to get in trouble, not wanting to disappoint, and change that to, hey, I can forge a new direction in my life. I can make things happen. I can take control. I can be the driver of my life. This changed the focus. The focus is always going to be there one way or the other. It's just a matter of pointing. And okay. That's what we try to do, because they're naturally going to have a focus. Right now, what happens is the situations, the people, the things that would interrupt that process, they work harder than our system, sometimes parents, sometimes the individuals. They work harder at getting your attention. You know, when it comes to these situations, making money or advertisers or anyone who would steal your attention, they work harder. They spend money on it. They devise systems. We need to take that same approach in the treatment arena and fight for attention, you know, and fight for those minutes of the day, fight for those eyeballs, because whoever gets the eyeballs wins. You know, whoever gets that attention wins. And we don't fight near as hard as the people who would do us harm. The people who would do you harm try harder. So Second Starts is about focusing, refocusing attention, and refocusing, I think, the three areas that can really help families change their lives. Just three basic areas that we like to focus on. So
okay.
That's what we did. So, and just to follow up on that, those areas, the first one we just talked about, enhancing the value of the current treatments, okay? Enhancing the absorption, focus on that heavy. Second area is rebuilding the support network. So for so long, the support network has been a matter of calling someone up and talking to them or bringing them to a meeting and discussing your pain and anxieties and working in a therapeutic manner. What we try to do is separate the therapeutic manner. Let the therapists, let the doctors, let the support people in addictions, let them all do their work. What we do now is we take that support network, that family, and we teach them a way to support this situation without the guilt and shame model that usually comes with it. There's better ways to support than to bring up the guilt and shame models. Those kind of things can be dealt with in therapy, but we find better ways to build a new network and build a new network and a stronger network, and not just a network that is, you know, willing to hush hush and be quiet about it, but a network that is only looking to help the individual progress. And that's what we do. So we change that network. And then the last thing we try to do is make them realize that this is just not getting better. And this is way more than just getting off of a substance. This is much more important than that. What is so important is figuring out a new way, a new driver in their life, and then teaching them how to constantly fuel that driver, you know, preparation for the actual slings and arrows that come in real life. Because dealing with the incarcerated population, I learned quickly that all types of treatments and yeses and I'm feeling betters and all that are possible during incarceration.
Sure.
But the key is, what do you do in real life situations? How do you handle that? And there are ways to prepare for that, that or can actually give them a better way to deal with the treatment part. Okay, we teach them better ways to real life dealing with it, we call it. So that's the three parts of the program.
Well, I'm sure that when you start speaking about incarceration, that's a very controlled environment.
Yes.
So it's easier to get the person's attention. Because, I mean, you've got to, you know,
yes.
Their attention is, I mean, they're kind of a captive audience, right?
Captive audience.
Yeah. And they either have to at some point engage and with the program. And I'm sure there are phases of, you know, they're being introduced to the program, mm-hmm. and then it's explained to them, and they probably go through, I'm assuming they go through phases of understanding, and you're illuminating the program to them, and they're like, oh, okay, well, there it is, and this is what it's going to do for me.
Yes.
At some point they have to go, am I going to engage in this and actually be a participant, or am I just going to just listen and accept what they're saying, or say things that I think they want to hear, you know, sort of thing. And but in real life, you know, hopefully when incarceration does end and they're back out in the real world, you and I both know that there's social media, there's all sorts of media outlets that are vying for their attention. And then they have their old buddies and people that they hung out with, you
right.
know, they associated with the wrong people or whatever, you know, there's a multifaceted thing that, there
It's
are what it, the world environment, the environment on the outside of incarceration is a whole
yes.
lot more dynamic and much more
Much,
disruptive.
much more, much more.
Yeah. And so,
And
preparing them while they're incarcerated to set their expectations of, hey, this, whatever you want to call it, this addiction or whatever, is going to come calling again. It's not just going to magically go away, and you're going to have to know how to deal with it.
exactly.
I've never personally been addicted to drugs or alcohol, so I can't speak to that. Can't have true empathy to that. But the people that are trying to that are in recovery, I'm sitting here babbling.
That's okay.
People that are in recovery, they have to make a mental and conscious decision to make changes in their lives, not hang out with the bad crowd, not hang out with the people that are going to encourage them into old habits, right? And
Exactly.
so, that's what people need. And
Yes. I think that one of the things that we have to realize, and this really goes to the heart of your podcast and your Facebook presence, a lot of this is very contingent on shaping the relationship between the parents and the young adult. And what we find is that when we allow the base relationship, which whatever we, who knows, with different situations, there are different troubles and there's different challenges. But when we allow the troubles and the challenges to interfere with the recovery process, that's when we get in trouble. We try to do is we try to separate those two things and let the clinical areas handle those mental challenges and explain to them that our recovery now can be something that is a little bit more systematic, okay, and a little bit more advantageous to the parents and the young child. And what we do is we teach the parents to engage and build a network that goes away from the focus on the young adult's deficits. We move away from their deficits and we focus all our attention on the path forward. And what we do, we model a physical and technical way to produce, to conceive, produce, and achieve different goals. And we give them a system that they can apply on a daily basis. And most of the program is taught just installing that system so that now, whatever troubles come up and whatever challenge you have, you place them in the context of the system. And then we have a way to deal with that. And the most important thing all over is that you have a lot of adults who may listen to this and they have a young adult who is having, they're having problems, whether it be drugs and alcohol, incarceration. In theory, they're all the same thing. There is a imprisonment that is ruining their lives. So if we can tell you, listen, what we need to do now is change your relationship with that. Okay. Change how you approach it. Okay. And change how you look at it and give yourself a way that doesn't cause you to, include guilt and shame. It sort of changes the game now because it's easier to make goals. It's easier to plot out direction when you can do that. And with a little help and a little administration, basically, that's what we do. We will offer to anyone who calls the same program and same plan that we would use anyway. Because what we do is help in the administration of the plan, but we freely give the plan away. We tell you exactly what we think you should do, how you think you should do it. So anybody who was to go to secondstars.com and book any type of appointment to call, the first thing I'm gonna do is tell you, listen, everything that we're going to do in our plan, I give you. That's not a problem. We want you to have it. Where we help is in the administration of the network for some people, because it is a premium solution. So where we will help them administer the network, show them how to, you know, approach these different situations, the techniques to use, everything. So it, because we feel that strongly about
it. Right.
Yeah. So it's and it's really an advantage to look at these things from that fresh view, because there's so much pressure on the parents of young adults. There's so much pressure from the young adult, pressure from society, pressure from, you know, maybe their peers on what's going on in your life. You know, if we can change that focus to a forward moving focus, next thing you know, there's a little bit more pep in the step. There's a little bit more, you know, it's a little bit more desire to get out there and keep working, because this, we sort of really drop down, eliminate, and reduce the guilt and shame part. And I find that extremely important. Extremely important. So, and another thing that we want to express is that really the leap from what we would call trouble for these types of families, the leap between that is really, there's really just a few things that need to be enhanced. The first thing, very important, is just this, the mere sense of self-agency and ownership. It's usually a subject and tactics that really have never actually been introduced to most.
What is that now? Self what?
Self-agency and ownership of situations. Most of the time, that is something that is not taught. Actually, some self-agency, that means the things and the actions that you do that are based on your self-benefit. In other words, what we like to call the right kind of selfishness. In other words, there's a cloud in people's mind between what's, if I do things for myself now, am I ignoring others? We have to understand that as a society, we have that. So are young people. In becoming adults, their sense of self-agency, taking care of themselves, making decisions for them, is really clouded by everything that is pressed upon them and in relationships with their parents or whoever's, you know, in charge of their upbringing. And these things cloud that sense of self-agency. What we'd like to do is we'd like to reintroduce those concepts and put them into physical working action on a daily basis throughout the program. Physical working action where you do action, see cause, see effect, see the effect of your personal self-agency, and learn what it is to employ those tactics and be able to see and feel what those results actually are. Take the theory out of it and actually see what those results are. Now build a program that is will last the long term in that area. And understand that when you build that foundation, you put redo those bricks around that foundation now, okay? This is what happens, and this is what now saves you and decreases the thoughts and senses of relapse. If you only try to get rid of the problem and cover it up, make it so that it's not there anymore, if you don't change the foundation, and that's what the parents and the child, if you don't change the foundation, this is why our relapse rates are upwards of, say, 75, 80% or more. I think I'm being generous when I say 80%, but, and this is why, because they don't change the foundation. Therapy and treatments, they work, but they are long-term solutions when right. You try to go and change the inner psyche. But there are shorter-term solutions that have more to do with execution that can go a long way now to making those things a lot stronger on the back end. And that's what we try to do. We try to change that. So we change that sense of self-agency. If we change the way they communicate, the way they hear and speak, and communicate, the way they take in and take out, very simple things they can do. And not to oversimplify, but these type of changes aren't rocket science. We find that for the families of young adults, fixing this problem is more akin to fixing a broken leg than taking a pill. You take a pill, it works immediately. Well, this is what they try to sell in the addiction arena now, a pill, a quick fix. I can tell you this and you'll be good. It's closer to, in reality, it's closer to fixing a broken leg. I have to cast it. Once I cast it in place, I let it heal. We use our natural ability. We knew, now we use the lack of pressure against it. We use nutrition. We use those things now to heal that area. Well, this is basically the same concept. Cast it up and then get it on a path to healing so that now along with the other things that the family is doing, whatever counseling, whatever addiction programs they are, we're multiplying this. We're taking a 1X and turn it to a 3X. And we feel like that is the best way to handle this. And this is something that I've seen just basically, I call this basically for me, it's actual nursing for me. It's a non-clinical solution I'm using, but I'm using a nursing mentality to this. You know, do no harm and set up and, you know, really increase the benefits of everything else that you're bringing in. And that's a lot of what Second Starts does.
Right.
Yeah. So, and a program not just for the young adult, but definitely also for the, you know, the parents. In other words, once they take this mindset, now they're looking at their young adult in a totally different light now. It's not the disappointment light. It's now the, okay, now I'm watching them grow.
Right.
And we're talking about, and we're seeing growth on a daily basis because the whole plan is to, you know, basically make efforts immediately, see results and benefits immediately. In other words, you can't heal immediately, but you can see results. I like to tell them, we can't fix everything in one day, but we can certainly make a 180 degree direction change in one day.
Right.
That we can do. And if people want to take that course, we love helping, we love talking. For those who do not want to fully engage in the program, still the benefits, the assets, the knowledge that we think we have, and the direction on how to handle it, I feel good about setting up people with a program and letting them go on their own if they need to. So,
well, as far as our Facebook parenting support group, our hope is that relationships will be restored and people will find healing, you know? And one of the things early on, when I started this podcast last year, one of the things I had to do was to build a foundation. So that foundation is marriage relationships. You know, you talk about parents, typically parents are partners, you know?
Yes.
And, you know, in this day and age that we live in, there are other unique parental situations that, you know, I don't really approach or get into because I'm more of a, my experience is from a traditional husband and wife, male, female, nuclear family, right? And so I had to go back to the marriage relationship and discuss what is a healthy marriage relationship. You know, what does that involve? What does that require? You know, requires respect, communications, forgiveness, all of the core values, right?
Right.
And so I had to set that stage in the podcast because I wanted parents to take ownership, you know, of none of us are perfect, you know, just like there isn't a manual for parenting children, there's not a manual per se for marriage. You know, we were attracted, we fall in love, we get engaged, we get married, you know, that process is different for everybody.
Right.
The timelines are different for everybody, but there's a basic process that happens, and we find ourselves husband and wife, and we're married, and we're cohabitating, and we're learning how to all of a sudden the honeymoon's over, and all of a sudden your partner's irritating the living crap out of you because they don't
Yes.
do this, that, or the other in a way that you want them to, right?
And right, exactly.
So anyway, I kind of set the stage for that and talk about marriage relationships and why it's so vital that you have a healthy marriage relationship.
Right.
That you're modeling a healthy marriage relationship to your children. Because how do boys learn how to become fathers? You know, because they
right.
watch the
Watching what
father.
they say.
How does the father treat the mother? Is there respect there? You know, is there love and adoration and all those things? And the ugly thing about some of this is that you start talking about parental relationships with their children as they become young adults, and they're dealing with addiction issues or whatever issue it is they're dealing with, lying, stealing, what have you, moral failures. Unfortunately, sometimes you can draw a direct correlation between the kids and the parents and go, ooh, geez, I wonder where they learned that behavior. Like my wife's a special ed teacher. She's an educator, and she has IEPs and plans that educational plans for the special ed kids, and parents are involved in that. And you see, she sees kids acting out in the classroom and doing things that are inappropriate or disruptive.
Right.
And you're wondering, like, wow, how did this kid get this way? And then she has parent teacher conferences or she has parents going off on her because of blah, blah, blah. And you're like, oh, wow. You know, when you watch the parent and their behavior, it's like, there's no wonder the kids are screwed up, right? Because the
exactly.
parents are screwed up.
Yes.
And so we like to illuminate the fact that we as parents we should be responsible for owning our garbage. Like when my kids were growing up, I tried to be transparent with my kids, and I tried
right.
to say, hey, I'm not perfect. Yeah, when I was in my 20s, I was a dumpster fire. It's a
right.
It's amazing that
exactly.
If it hadn't been for God stepping into my life and putting out some of that dumpster fire and helping me get healing over some of the garbage I experienced as a child, right? There's no telling where I might be in prison or dead or something.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So the relationship restoration and healing is directly correlated back to some of the mistakes the parents made. You
well,
know,
and Jim, you know,
you have to be transparent with your children and go, oh wow, you know, maybe I caused or helped to cause some of this stuff, and maybe I will, because of the way we acted in front of you, or the, you know, you got parents out there that are alcoholics and drug addicts, and they smoke pot in the home and do all manner of stuff that is very, very damaging to their children, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying I absolutely do not advocate that parents are, you know, because the children are screwed up, the parents are the direct cause of that. That's sometimes,
well,
you can raise your, you can have a wholesome, God-fearing, whatever your, you know, how you raise your children, you can have a, you can do everything you can.
Oh, exactly.
To provide a good environment for your kids.
Sure.
And you try to pass along your values, your spiritual values, your worldview, all that stuff. And all of a sudden they're 18, 19 years old, and they just throw it all away and go, screw that. I'm going to do what I want to do.
Well, exactly. And the important thing for parents to understand is that when it comes to the recovery situation, there are countless ways that you can find fault in your own parental situation. You know, if you look for errors that you've made as a parent, and I'm a parent also, if you look for errors, you can easily find them. I think what we try to advocate is this, and it's a little statement that says basically, let's fix your biggest problem first. And basically what we're saying is this: regardless of what's going on in the family unit, right now, you have an individual that is at risk of being lost forever. So what we need to do is we need to focus on that, handle that part. Because once you start handling that, you start a domino effect even with a marriage. Okay, what do you start doing? First of all, you start bettering the relationship between you and the child, the young person. You start bettering the relationship now with you and other siblings that may be around viewing this, whether a little older, a little younger. You start increasing and making that relationship better. you start taking things like your financial situation, which this is these things greatly affect, and you start now improving and focusing on them. So the motto of Second Starts is, let's take your biggest problem, work on that, and then let's also notice and accept the fact that we can help now a whole host of problems if we focus and concentrate on those issues, just with that kicking over that one domino, okay? And we can do that again. We can do that without calling in your parenting into question, or overly focusing on the poor results that you've had in the past. We can do all that and still make forward. So for people who are, you know, real life marriage situations, do, will, and can bleed into your relationship, a recovery relationship with a young person. But it does not have to be the driving factor. And it doesn't, those situations do not have to win the day. And that's the most important thing for them to understand. Worrying about the guilt or parental situation or any problems they've been having then, it is something that should be embarked on as a constant and long-term healing event.
Right.
But when we can take that biggest problem that's driving and putting now pouring gasoline on all the other issues, when we can douse that down, get that under control, and get that young person's life in a forward-leaning direction, it will have a domino effect on all those other processes, you know, and that's the most important thing. It will strengthen the family unit. Okay. It will strengthen the psychosocial, financial aspects of the family and everything that you can improve. If you got 10 things, I always say, if you got 10 things, you see three of them you can jump on and improve, jump on them. Don't wait to hit the home run.
Right.
Take the single, take the double, take the bunt. Take everything that you can get. And that is how we reach recovery ultimately. Taking what we can get, taking the low hanging fruit, taking all the fruit. So, and it helps. It'll definitely help. And then all those things now bounce back. And now what's happening to the marriage now? That's improving and that's getting stronger because certain pressures are being relieved and everything's now improving and moving in the right direction.
Right.
Right. So that's our whole outlook on this thing. I didn't get to it, but I just wanted to mention that you talk about the soapbox, which I'm going to be doing a taping right after me and you get done. Basically, we just talk to people who work in the recovery community. And a lot of times I found that when I speak to people in any of these communities, they have something in common. And what they have in common is they've got some real thoughts and opinions on this situation that they love to talk. If somebody will sit down for more than a few minutes and listen to them talk, they got something they want to say. Well, that's what the soapbox is basically for. We talk to individuals in recovery and we listen to their views on the subject and we get to know them a little personally.
Right.
And it's been fun for me.
Yeah.
We enjoy it.
I like the platform.
Yeah. It's good just to let some people who, because this is hard, it's hard work dealing up against this brick wall, which is the recovery space. You know, a lot of times there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of beating and running into a brick wall. And there's a lot of resistance, you know, not just from the families or the young adults, but inside the community.
Right.
There's a lot of resistance. There's resistance. There's unnecessary competition. You know, I find that as a registered nurse who has come up with a non-clinical way, I constantly have to deal with clinicians who think that I'm trying to use a clinical approach. And when I talk to them about it, they say, well, you know, you're not using any clinical approaches. And I said, I never intended to compete with you. This is not a competition.
Right.
We can actually, as crazy as it sounds, we can benefit each other and then also now benefit our clients. So.
Well, I know from experience, the mental health, mental retardation, MHMR system, it's horribly broken. Criminal justice system is horribly broken. And one of the problems with those systems is that they or the program it for whatever reasons, it's like it's a revolving door. It's like, when you look at attorneys and judges and court systems, and they're probably seeing the same offenders over and over again.
Oh,
And
certainly they are. Certainly they are.
same thing with mental health and mental retardation.
Well,
The
it
mental
was.
health arena, it's like you want people to get healed. You want people to get fixed, right? You don't want to see the same people coming back into the system over and over and over again, right? We have to break that cycle somehow.
Well, the system is not built. The system is not. And for someone who spent, and still to some degree, spent time in the system, I think what people have to understand about the system is that they're expecting way more from the system than the system is capable of.
Well,
Remember,
there you go.
the system is only that, all it is a system. That system does not account for the friction that real life and real people give it. So you, no matter how you draw it up, okay, you have to deal still in specifics in real life. And the system, because of time, money, and resources, is does not have the ability to customize the way we would like to see it done. Without customization for each individual, you will get a revolving door effect because the
Right.
system cannot fill the needs of this many people at that rate. I saw many of my practitioners would see these people. They talk to them for, okay, you talk to somebody for 45 minutes once a week. There are some benefits that can come from that, but the immediate benefits that we need in a recovery system like that is it's not possible. So the system that we build are not built to do what we ask them to do. So then our next phrase is, well, the system's broken. I hate to tell people from being in the system, these systems aren't broken. They've reached their limits of their effectiveness for the numbers that they have to deal with in the
Sure.
different varieties. They've reached the limit of their effectiveness. It's not broken. If it was to be totally redone and fixed, people say, let's fix it. What you're asking something of a system that isn't necessarily possible. You're
I got
asking
you.
to fi you're asking you're asking to fix thousands of people with a small number of people who are just workers who are stressed themselves, many who have training deficits. It's not, the answer isn't the system. Unfortunately, the answer is for individuals to take a stronger look at their loved ones, okay, and take a stronger approach to what's going on, how situations are being affecting them specifically, and then adding in all the percentage of help that they can get. Now you start taking people from that revolving door. And I'm a strong believer that if the failure rate of treatment is somewhere is up to 80%, then I think that we would make a strong, strong impact if we could bring that down to 50 or 60,
Right.
which we're not saving everybody. But when we concentrate, we will become more effective and we will become stronger and we'll become better at it as individuals and as a system. That'll make the system look better too. Once we start doing that, next thing you know, the numbers start going up, and then everybody says, well, the system's working better. It'd be the same system, but we will start getting more power out of it and getting more worth out of it and getting more value out of the resources that we put in. So.
So, what do you think? What do you think drives you from day to day to do this?
That Sally Port story.
Yeah.
Just sitting in there with people that are scared. A 18-year-old, 17-year-old, 19-year-old, scared to death. And then the conversation on the other end of the phone with the parents who are frustrated, have not been given any directions, don't know there's an easier way. And just seeing that and seeing the waste, seeing some of the really technically, you can just tell by brief conversations, some of the smartest kids that have so much capability. And hey, it's got nothing to do with I've seen rich kids come through. I've seen dirt poor kids come through. I've seen orphans come through. I've seen them all come through. And they all share the same qualities.
Right.
And it's a quality that we can do something about. It's a quality that we can help. And, you know, as a lifelong nurse, basically that's sort of what I do. You know, so that's ingrained in me now to do that, to try to help people. So that's the direction that I've chosen to take.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, I know you're passionate about it, and I'm glad that this Second Starts program is there for people. We have 5 minutes left. Talk to the audience that might be listening to this from my Facebook support group. Talk to them directly about how this program, or any program for that matter, could help their situation.
Well, specifically, how Second Starts can help you is basically give you a course that you're going to find a little different than most of the approaches that have been given you. But immediately when you first hear it and first hear the rundown, the first thing you'll say is, you know what, that makes total sense. You know, it's very, very sensible, it really deals with very core issues in a way that uses, and we call it leveraged-based tapered life management. In other words, we use an actual tapered system to induce change. It's not just a bunch of lectures. We use an actual tapered system to see cause, effect, and results. In general, I would tell the parents, the people that, you know, don't be intimidated by the guilt that society and these our systems have put on you. You are going to obviously be made to feel like you're failing in one way or the other. But if you change this foundation and change your approach, those feelings can wash away fairly quickly once you start looking in a different direction. Okay. You can always work on those problems, but when you start looking at things and start actually looking for, you know, suggesting wins, looking for wins, and then seeing them wins come about, it's going to heal your mentality and your approach a lot faster than you would believe. It's all about basically, like say, rebuilding a direction, changing focus. And that's something that you all can do, and it would benefit, it benefits family units, it benefits parents, it benefits young adults.
There you go.
Yeah, so.
Someone bring up page for our podcast. Let's see, profile page. So yeah, ABCs of Parenting Adult Children. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and we've got just a few minutes left. I'm going to go ahead and close this out. Okay. And then we can talk afterwards.
Okay.
So thank you for listening to today's episode, talking to the listening audience. You can listen to this podcast on Spotify, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Apple, and Public Radio. You can contact me at James C. Moffitt, M-O-F-F-I-T-T, at Outlook.com. That's James C. Moffitt at Outlook.com. Please share our podcast with your friends, family, and coworkers. Richard, thank you so much for being a guest speaker today and for sharing.
My pleasure.
Second Starts with my listening audience, and I'm very thankful for the energy and the passion and the drive you have for helping people to get beyond addictions and all of the issues that affects their lives because of it. And on the screen, you can see the ABCs of Parenting Adult Children profile page. This is going to be episode 13 that'll be online here in the next hour or so. Thanks for listening and have a blessed day.
Thank you.
And I'm going to.
Please tune in next week for another episode of our podcast on parenting adult children.
Are you sure you want to stop recording? Mm-hmm.